Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
Well, sorry, Gavin's flashing at me.
Whoa. Put your shirt back on, Gavin.
I'm Dan Nalen, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and it is one of the oldest independent publications in the entire United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action, sports, and subculture. In this episode, we talk to the Bad Kids, we talk to the Vile Blue Shades, and we get Mike Riedel, resident beer expert, in the studio to talk about all the latest local beer news. Bad Kids are a group of drag queens who do live performances in and around the Salt Lake City area. They're made up of art and theater majors, of course, who have taken the average drag show and transformed it into big, full-blown productions. They've earned praise from both the LGBT community as well as the performing arts community around town for the work they've done to promote the genre. Slug writer Christian Schultz sat down with Cartel from the Bad Kids.
So tell us about how you got started in drag and the process of growth to where you are now.
I know it's funny, I had this conversation earlier with a coworker that I feel like there was never a period of time where I wasn't doing drag. I look at my childhood and even involuntarily, like my sister would dress me up and put makeup on me and stuff when I was a little kid. And in life, we are constantly having to put on some sort of persona. I mean, I don't think there's anything fake about always being different, because you talk with your friends differently than you would talk with your parents or your teachers or your coworkers. And my friends and I sort of consider that to just be drag, like everything is drag. I've always been really interested in fashion and makeup and personas. You know, from childhood I always would pretend that I was a witch or pretend that I was some mystical character, which is, I guess, an escape route for being bullied as a young kid. You come up with your own friends, I guess. So I've had multiple characters throughout my life that I've developed, and some of them started as writing. Like, I used to think that I would write a book or something more interesting. I wouldn't say more interesting. Living it is even more exciting than writing about it. But I don't think there's a super distinct time that I started it, because I've always incorporated it into Halloween or dress up with friends. But I created the persona Cartel 2 years ago. Almost 6 years ago, I started doing drag in the city with the sort of traditional drag queen circuit. I never wanted to follow all of their rules, because, I mean, I applaud traditional drag queens because it's highly uncomfortable. All of the padding and shaving and heels and tucking and duct taping, and I mean, there's an art behind every type of drag, but for me, I don't know, it's part of who I am. It's not necessarily a character anymore, but I think that Cartel has evolved from being a total character that I used to write about. I used to write a blog where Cartel was this, like, girl who was, it was very Carrie, I guess. She, in the story, she was killed on prom night by a group of kids, and she came back and had no soul, but she kind of came back to wreak havoc on all of the pretty people. Which, I mean, I guess I'm sort of doing that. But I used to consider Cartel to be a character, and now I think Cartel is just who I am. Kind of sounds like a psychological disorder.
Tell me a little bit more about Salt Lake's drag culture before the Bad Kids started performing.
Just from what I knew of it, I've heard stories of, like, late 80s, 90s drag in Salt Lake, which was far more interesting. But there was a period of time in the, I don't know how to phrase this properly, the 2010 era, like the first decade of the 2000s. Yeah. When I first moved here, it was nothing but, like, really traditional drag queens call fishy, which is like trying to emulate the look of a biological woman as much as possible. I didn't see anything edgy or punk rock at all when I first moved here. I caught glimpses of like Drew Landerman and Jared, but I was under 21, and so we weren't really hanging out at the same places. I never thought of them as drag queens, and I never saw them perform. So I just thought of them as these like beautiful, androgynous, like kind of dark creatures. And I was very inspired by them, but I was also very intimidated by them. I was just this like small town kid that was unsure of where I belonged. And so I was just used to seeing just pretty drag, and I did that myself for a while, but it never felt authentic to me.
What made you begin performing as Cartel?
It took a long time to get to where to get to that point. Originally I just quit altogether. My drag persona was, my name was Zoe Vanity, and even though it was more traditional, I always wore like really short, like crazy, like sort of Ellen DeGeneres-esque wigs, and my style was like sort of tomboy-inspired drag. People always thought that I was a real woman, but just like a tomboy drag queen, I guess. I just got a lot of negative feedback from the traditional drag community because I liked wearing like high-top Converse, and I sort of had this schoolgirl look. A lot of the time I'd wear like tube socks and Converse, and I was always told that I was not following the rules, and I could never truly understand what that meant, because there's not like a mysterious book of drag queen rules, but everyone always acted like there was. So I quit doing drag because A, I was convinced that I would never be able to find a boyfriend, and at that time that was something that I guess was important to me, and B, this very hostile environment. Just none of the drag queens I ever met in the city were happy. They were all really angry, sad boys who developed female personas so that they could feel beautiful and important, which, I mean, obviously drag is a catalyst or a tool to find a confidence you might not have in your daily life, but I've definitely come full circle now, whereas when I'm not in drag, I still feel like the same entertainer. I can walk into a room and feel a lot more confident, and I use drag as a positive tool instead of a mask to hide behind. My best friend Klaus von Austerlitz and I, before Cartel existed, we were at a show at Club Sound, and this drag queen from Seattle was performing, and she was a very traditional looking drag queen, but the performance itself was very interesting and edgy, and she had these some sort of magic trick fire things where she would snap her fingers and there'd be a little flame. And I remember thinking how much I missed it, because it had been a year since I quit doing drag, and I just decided that I wanted to do it again, but on my own terms. And Klaus and I just started going out in like very Party Monster inspired, just like bizarre costumes to rebel against tradition, and it just developed from there, I guess.
Tell me about the charities that you work with. How do you find them?
We've put together a couple of our own fundraiser shows where we've mutually decided upon local charities that we feel are important. A lot of fundraiser shows that I perform in are things that I'm invited to perform in, and last night I performed in a fundraiser for like the student union at the university. So they held a little pageant like almost a year ago, and Klaus was in it. I guess everybody knows who I am in the city as a performer, so when shows are going on, people will often ask me because they know I'll bring people. So that's a good start. I mean, I have a following. I wouldn't say that it's like massive. There's a lot of people who appreciate our shows, but I still, in my mind, think that I'm like this underground character, but it's starting to be apparent that it's becoming more mainstream, and I haven't quite adjusted to that yet. We typically try to choose less commonly aided charities, I guess, if that's the best way to say it. Like, I mean, everybody does fundraisers for the AIDS Foundation and breast cancer awareness, and like, that's amazing, and these foundations need cash flow all the time. And you definitely can't say like one charity is more important than the other. But we did one big fundraiser for T. It's a transgender support group here in Salt Lake City. I believe it's Trans Education Advocates, but they're a group that their mission is to educate the queer community and merge not only the queer community, but just Salt Lake community in general, and educate people about pronouns and just the difference between trans and drag, or using the word transvestite or tranny. Like, these are things that you grow up hearing, and then once you become submerged in the queer community, you start to realize how awful they sound until you know how to use them properly. But that's a group that we felt as performers was not being appreciated, and so we did a fundraiser for them. A couple people in the group are vegan. We've discussed like working with like animal rights groups, and I guess it varies from show to show, like what we decide. We haven't done a ton of fundraisers, which is something I'm not happy to say. We've talked a lot about putting that as a big focus for this upcoming, like, next few months and the next year. Because now that we have a public presence, I think it's really important that we use that positively.
What would you say are the goals of the Bad Kids?
Originally, the Bad Kids was a really small group, and it was easy for us to have meetings together and discuss goals. And now, I mean, people know that myself and Klaus are organizing shows and organizing events, and we're sort of the managerial force behind it all. But the Bad Kids has just gotten bigger and bigger and bigger, and I feel like I can't speak on behalf of the Bad Kids fairly anymore, because I want everybody to have their own style and their own opinion and their own drive. We all do drag for different reasons. We all perform for different reasons. And the common goal is just to love each other regardless. I think that the Bad Kids are about just embracing diversity in the fullest that we possibly can, and not setting rules and just letting anyone come. Like, we've had girls perform in like exaggerated dress as like they identify as like femme queens or real girl drag queens. We've had biological males perform just as they are with a little makeup and costume that supports what they're presenting as a performance. And then we have drag queens, and we have characters that sort of create their own category, like Willard and the Bearded Femme, who are, I don't view them as male or female. They're just these beautiful embodiments of gender and art. And I think that the Bad Kids, just as a whole, I think the vision is love, as silly as that sounds. And there's no other way for me to put it. I think the collective has grown beyond me being able to count how many people are involved in it. I can think off the top of my head, for our Pride show, we had like almost 30 people in one show. It just keeps growing, and I just hope that the original vision of acceptance and rebelling against tradition, I hope that never fades. And if I ever move away, or I would love to see the Bad Kids be a staple part of Salt Lake City for a very long time, regardless of whether I'm here or not.
For more information on the Bad Kids and their future performances, search for The Bad Kids Utah on Facebook. The Via Blue Shades is a 12-piece experimental rock band with a number in the band that fluctuates wildly depending on when you see them. They've had an ever-rotating cast of characters through the years, always fronted by Ryan Jensen on vocals, and featuring musicians from bands you might know like Laserfang, Pink Lightning, the Red Bennies, and the Purbats, among many others. They broke it up and reformed several times, most recently taking a hiatus in the summer of 2010, which led to yet another breakup. But they'll still be getting back together on Thursday, October 31st, for a special Halloween show. This is a song called Dark Wizard off of their album Triple Threat. That was Dark Wizard from the Vile Blue Shades. Before the show kicks off on Halloween night, our own Soundwaves producer Gavin Sheehan sat down with Ryan Jensen to talk about the band and their plans for the show.
Let's just kick off with John Thursday, because that's kind of where the last interview happened, like just as that album was coming out. How did that do for you guys? Like, what did you think of the response that you were getting from that album? Because it kind of blew up locally.
Yeah, I liked it. You think it blew up here? You should go to Montana.
Montana did well.
Yeah, really well.
Because I had known in the previous albums, like, you'd only released a few copies, like there were 25 to 30 or something. Like, what did you think of that reaction? Like, now you've got this album out that has tons of people buying it and now totally into the band for, like, the first time.
It was cool. Well, I don't know. I don't really pay attention because I'm such a hermit that I didn't really notice that they were selling. I just noticed that we ran out.
Oh.
The reason we had so few records before is because Eli wasn't in the band yet, and he's more like a business guy, and the rest of us aren't. That's when he made us re-release everything on Triple Threat, right before John Thursday. I don't mind if there's only 20 records out there, you know what I mean?
Yeah. You had played a couple of shows before the hiatus, like there was one Halloween show and then another with October Evening at Masonic Temple. And then you guys just kind of went on hiatus and then disbanded. What exactly happened during that period?
We disbanded?
It sounded like you guys had essentially broken up, but you didn't say you were broken up.
I think we were just all exhausted. It took a year to record that record. I'm never recording on tape again. Ever. Never. Never. No, I just think we were tired of playing, like, every week. You know what I mean? Just seemed like we were overdoing it a bit. If you want a show to be more special, play less. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Plus, we were all pretty tired of each other at that point. Just because the recording process was such a pain in the ass. I mean, who spends that long recording a record when all our other records took like 2 days, you know?
Yeah. it's kind of weird to hear you say that. Like, I get that with a band of four people, but with 12, you'd think there's enough, with some people, a disconnect between members that you wouldn't immediately get all sick of each other that quickly.
Well, I'll tell you this. I was mostly the one talking to everybody through everybody else.
Mm.
Like, I was the one talking to each person. And they would give me their grievance, and then I'd smooth it over with that person. Because it's really hard to keep all those personalities together, especially when everybody has an ego, you know what I mean? I mean, you can imagine.
Yeah.
You can just imagine.
How was the hiatus for you? Like, what were you doing during that time?
Drinking.
That's it?
Drinking, going to work, having a girlfriend takes up a lot of time, which I had at the time. I don't know, we're fighting a lot. So, I guess for me, it was fine.
What made you guys, first off, kind of reform, and then second, play a reunion show over at Urban?
Well, what happened with that was Will called us up and offered us a lot of money. And that was basically the only way you were going to get all of us back on stage together. And then we spent it all on free records for the fans. Aren't we kind?
Free records. We'll get to that in a second. Who's all back?
Everybody.
Everybody? Dan Thomas come in?
Yep. Dan Thomas and Shane, Meg, everybody.
Nice. Do you know what you have planned for the lineup yet? Like what you want to play, or are you just going to figure it out night of?
Well, we're not going to do that. We're obviously going to have to practice. You know what I mean? That's definitely going to be a have to. But, you know, as soon as they heard that we were doing a reunion show here, Montana called us up and asked us to play their music festival as well. And so we went out there. And it went over really well. It was really easy to get back into the swing of things.
And then you had mentioned to me that you guys were recording a live album.
It's recorded.
Was it the Montana show?
No. We've recorded lots of shows. Mm. And so what we did is we put it together. Some of it's in Utah and some of it's in Denver. And we just mashed it all together and then had it mastered. Sounds really good. It's one of our better records.
Would you say it's a best of, or would you say it's more of, this is what sounded best to us, so we put it on here?
Both. We put all the hits on there, just to make sure we got them all.
No, but how much of the weird stuff? Because I know there's that definition, you and I talked about it a few years ago. There's the hits, and then there's the weird, and you guys are more apt for bringing the weird, just to piss some people off.
I love the weird, but it's a little of everything. There's even like a half an hour banter after the record. It's on its own track, because we took it all out so that the record flowed better. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Are you doing vinyl? Is it just CD?
It's just CD. It's going to be on Octopus Records. It's got a really cool layout. Got all everybody that did art for the band over the years did a little something. They all got their own cover, like Trent and Suri and Meg and me and Patrick. You get a lot of pull-out posters.
Oh, very cool. And you're giving those away for free?
Yes.
So you can only get those at the Halloween show, or is it going to be kind of like you'll get them when you can?
Well, they're going to be at the Halloween show for free. We're going to give them to people as they go out the door so they don't have to hold on to it the whole time, because that's a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
You know, somebody hands you something, then you have to walk around with it all fucking night. It's a terrible nightmare.
After these reunion shows and seeing how Montana responded, and I've seen the past shows at Urban, if that's not a sellout, I'd be shocked as hell. Like, is there any idea that you guys will get back together?
No.
And you're just done?
This has been a nightmare enough.
For you or for everybody in general, would you say?
For everybody in general, except for Shane.
Just not
Shane. He had a great time. He was like, we should do this every 3 months, you know? Go to a different town and put on a big show. And I was like, that sounds expensive, dude. No way.
So essentially, once this show happens,
that's that. That's all they get.
This is the last time you're ever going to try and reform Vablu Shades, unless somebody comes around with more money.
Probably. I know, it's pretty sad, because for once we were all excited to actually get paid for once. We've never made a dime, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Everything just went back into the machine of what it was. Everybody was all thrilled they were going to have that money in their pocket. And then we got the dumb idea to put out free records. I don't know why we did that. And there will be t-shirts, too.
Giving away the t-shirts or selling the t-shirts?
I'm not 100% sure on that one, because I don't know. If Meg had to spend money, she's going to have to recoup.
Yeah.
I don't want anybody to pay out of pocket.
Yeah. That'd be nice to have a Meg VBS shirt.
Oh, and it's rad, too. It's really cool.
Do you have anything special planned for the show? I know it's Halloween, and I know you guys, especially with Meg, usually play dress-up. I remember the all-blue show once. Anything special coming, or is it more of you won't know until just before going in?
We're not going to know until we're going in there, I'm sure. I mean, we literally got everybody involved. Even Colin is setting up those lights that are hooked to the drums and shit.
Nice.
So it should be a lot of fun. A lot of people wanted to play it. Will's band gets to play it.
I was going to say, Future of the Ghost is the only supporting band. Is that something he wanted it to be, or is that something where you guys like...
That's something he wanted.
Okay.
I'm sure it's to put the pressure on so we play a longer show. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're not going to get away with playing 10 songs.
Exactly. And especially since now Urban, like, they open their doors at 8 now. Shows start at 9.
Ugh. Are you kidding? I'm not playing 3 hours. We played 1 3-hour show, and it was a disaster. And we were banned from the bar. Maybe we'll just play one note at the end forever and just wait out the last call. You know what I mean?
We're just going to have, you know, Eli hold this one key on a keyboard down.
Oh, we've got songs that can go forever.
Oh, yeah, I know. Like, some of those songs, it seems like if you wanted to, you could extend those out into 40-minute dance tunes.
Oh, and they do. Legendary Arcade, oh my god. I will kill Dan Thomas if he makes another 5-minute song. Because on record, it's less than 2. And I always am trying to remind everybody of that this is supposed to be a 2-minute hit, not a 5-minute epic about video games. I mean, you almost don't even notice it on the record.
Any thoughts on, if this is the final show and you're not doing anything else after this, like, what's your final thoughts on Vablu Shades as a whole?
I'm going to try and keep it positive.
That's it.
That's as far as I'm willing to go with that answer. We're all trying to force our smiles across our face, trying not to step on each other's toes. It's like any ex-girlfriend that you get back together with. All of a sudden, the same issues are there.
They will be getting back together for a big fat show on Halloween night. That's Thursday, October 31st, playing alongside of the Future of the Ghost, who have not played a lot of shows lately, so that's great stuff. It's at the Urban Lounge at 9 p.m., and it is a mere $8. For a complete history of the Vile Blue Shades, check out Slug's September 2008 issue online, and you can download select albums from the band at vilebluesshades666.bandcamp.com. This is your weekly daily calendar for the week starting October 29th and running into, can you believe it, November. Ugh, it's hard to believe, isn't it? I looked through the calendar, found all kinds of goodies. I suggest you do the same. Slugmag.com. Every damn day of the week, there's always new stuff being added to the listings. When I looked through this week, I found all sorts of goodies for myself. Deer Tick on Tuesday, October 29th, a really incredible live rock band. They've played at Urban a lot over the years. I've seen them several times. Always great. Always includes a Nirvana cover of all things, and their new album is one of the best of the fall, so definitely check that out. The same night, one of my old retro favorites, Living Color, playing at the Depot. I saw them at the Speedway Cafe about a million years ago. Great live band as well, so that's a tough one to call. Maybe hit Living Color and then make your way over to Deer Tick. Wednesday, October 30th, Mike Dowdy from Soul Coughing doing all Soul Coughing tunes at the Urban Lounge. That is on Wednesday the 30th. Then, yes, it's Halloween. Couple of big shows. Juicy J from 3-6 Mafia. You might remember their tunes from Hustle and Flow, Oscar winners. He's got a solo tour going on over at the Depot while that aforementioned Vile Blue Shades and Future the Ghost show takes over Urban Lounge. That should be a blast. On Friday, November 1st, the Moondoggies, straight out of Seattle, roots rock crew, really good. They're playing with the Quick and Easy Boys, who are kind of a jaunty rock band themselves. They're co-headlining over at the Stateroom. On Saturday, November 2nd, I would take that chance to go up to Heber City because I love me a cowboy poetry gathering, and they have one of the best ones in the West. You can catch some tunes, catch some poetry, eat some barbecue, wander aimlessly around the Heber City High School. It's pretty fun. Sunday, November 3rd, the California Guitar Trio, amazing guitar players. They are playing at the Peary's Egyptian Theater up in Ogden. Really worthwhile. I'm not really into classical guitar, but those guys can seriously play. Monday, November 4th, Government Mule along with Vintage Trouble at the Depot. Jam band meets some classic soul. That should be a good time. Same night over at Kilby Court, Quasi and Blues Control. Another fine show. And then over at Kilby Court, also on Monday, November 4th, Of Montreal. That is at Urban Lounge. That is a big night for a Monday in this town. As always, slugmag.com every damn day of the week. For a mere $5 a month or $50 a year, you can add quality content to your own free listings. Otherwise, add your events on there for free. It's a good thing to do. Abiogene is a progressive metal band from right here in Salt Lake City, comprised of members from both Utah and San Diego. Currently, the band is made up of Austin Criddle, Zeke Lindgren, Billy Hansen, and Kyle Baslow Barlow. The band spent most of the year in the studio and recently released their debut self-titled album. This is a song called Human Imperfection from Abiogene.
Seen aliens on a prop. I love her. I could, but it would probably take a whole lot of time. The reason I stayed there, when I got out in 1989, we had cataloged 57 different species. You have individuals that look very much like you and myself that could walk among us and you wouldn't even notice the difference.
Download the album, check out abiogene.bandcamp.com, and for more information on the band, visit them online at abiogene.com. We are here welcoming Mike Riedel back into the Soundwave studio, resident beer expert. Welcome, Mike, and thank you for coming in.
Thanks again for having me.
Why don't we start with, as we record this, the Great American Beer Festival has just gone into the rearview mirror over in Denver.
Just ended Saturday night.
Yeah, and people will be hearing this a couple weeks later, but I want to hear who won. Who are the goods from our neck of the woods?
Locally, we've had some pretty strong showings this year. Not as strong as some years, but still some great beers represented and actually some surprises on some of the winners.
Like that?
Partablom. We've talked about Partablom before. That's Red Rocks Dandelion Ale.
Yeah.
That one ended up getting a bronze medal in the experimental beers category.
Nice.
Which had a lot of entries. So that was quite...
Everybody's sort of trick beer, so to speak, is in that category.
Experimentals are crazy because they cover the
entire
gamut.
It can be anything, right? Any style, any flavor.
Right. So when you can dial in something that all the judges can pretty much agree on.
It's drinkable.
You know it's a good beer.
Yeah, pretty good.
I think one of the biggest wins as far as for Utah beers, it goes to Hopper's Helles Fest beer. They got a gold in the Helles beer category. And this is a feather in the cap to their brewer, Donovan Steele, who has, for the last 2 years, been awarded gold for his lagers.
Whoa.
And sadly enough, he wasn't able to make it this year.
And he wins a gold with
and
a new
sadly,
entry, right?
And sadly, last year he wasn't able to make it, so he wasn't winning gold. So I think...
Give him some time off, Hoppers, for God's sakes, man.
I think the lesson we're going to take away from here is, Donovan, don't go back to GABF.
Yeah, right? No kidding. You win every time you don't show up. That's strong stuff.
Another surprise, Uwinder's Summer Ale, S-U-M-R.
Yeah.
That won a bronze in the English Summer Ale category.
Really? Nice.
That was a nice surprise.
I've sipped a few of those.
That's a great beer. And then Wasatch's White Label, which you may have seen in the liquor stores or at your favorite watering hole.
Yeah.
That's a American interpretation of a Belgian wit beer.
Oh, yeah.
That came away with a silver, another very popular category.
Yeah. And then strong.
It's a great beer. One of my all-time favorites won another medal this year. It's Squatter's Fifth Element. If you haven't had that, it's a wild ale.
Okay.
Very sour. This one is a blend of sour ale and Belgian saison.
Oh, wow.
So you get a little bit of that.
Do they serve it year-round, or is that a
special occasion? No, it only comes around once a year, and you only see around 1,200 bottles.
Oh, wow.
And so when it hits hard, wow. And it's gone.
And it goes and wins awards.
Yeah.
Nice.
So that's what represented.
Some highlights.
Everything on here is probably still available, but not the Fifth Element.
Yeah.
That should be rolling around. Hopefully March-ish.
Okay. A little end of winter time treat there to keep an eye out for.
Yeah, you'll probably still be able to find some summer floating around somewhere. Everything else you should be able to find.
Well represented, as always. I mean, Utah does pretty well at that, and other beer festivals. Obviously, that's the big dog, right?
Yeah,
the Great American.
And it's so huge now.
I can't even imagine trying to make my way around that place over a number of days.
It's like
so much to sample.
It is. It's like walking into three football fields. It's just massive.
That's unbelievable. Nice. Well, what's happening a little closer to home here?
A little closer to home, we have some seasonals out right now. First seasonal from Uinta is their Wet and Wild. Now, what that is their wild extra pale ale that they've wet hopped with Simcoe hops. Now, wet hopping is when you take hops that are fresh off the vine, usually less than 24, 48 hours, and then you take those hops, undried, and throw them into your beer, and that makes a really nice, juicy ale in this case. Makes the citrus notes really pop.
Mm. Does it come overly hoppy that way, or not really?
It's
a hoppy beer if you like the hoppy beer.
This is a hoppy beer as it is.
Yeah.
Now it tastes really hoppy and fresh.
Yeah.
So
wow.
Get that while you can.
That sounds great.
It's got its own handle. So
I like a hoppy beer, so that sounds great, I should say. Sounds great to me, people.
Yeah. No bottles, only draft. Just look for the handle.
All right. Excellent.
Wasatch Winterfest Ale is returned, and that is Wasatch's holiday beer.
Yeah. I like that beer.
It's our winter warmer.
Yeah.
And this is another hoppy beer if you like hoppy beers. But this has a nice caramel and toffee base on it.
Mm.
So you get the nice citrus and pine hoppiness to it. But it's got that chewy.
I like it. That's a nice holiday combo for sure.
It really is.
Yeah.
And it's a great
beer. It's tasty.
That is even better when it's fresh.
Yeah.
Most hoppy beers are.
Mm. So stop by the Wasatch outlets in Park City, perhaps, and just...
This is available at liquor stores.
On tap?
Not on tap.
Not on tap.
It's a 6% beer, I think.
Okay. Good. So, that's a holiday tradition, too.
So at the beer store, liquor stores, and most of your fine beer bars.
Excellent.
When you get a beer from Utah, you think it's going to be a little thin because of the lack of alcohol.
Right.
Bohemian has come up with the most full-bodied 4% beer I have ever had.
Mm.
This is Bohemian's Isar Rye. And this is a rye beer made with, I think they said, 45% rye malt, which is a tough malt to brew with because it's very oily and thick. It's hard, it's hard to coax all the goodness out of this malt.
Right, it takes some work, some expertise.
So we already got a thick beer as it is, and then they've made it with this German Hefeweizen yeast, which also adds a little more bodiness and creaminess. So you've got this big,
thick, hefty,
chewy, cloudy, reddish rye lager that is
delicious,
so delicious,
and it's Utah strength.
Yeah, because
because it's that much work goes into that.
Yeah, and you've got and rye is spicy as it is, and then you get the spicy esters from the yeast. And you've got a really nice round lager. And this is on right now, and if you don't get it...
It's your own damn fault. You're a fool.
You're a fucking idiot.
So Bohemians, find it.
Yeah, and so that's pretty much what is new right now.
Mm.
Most of these are available at your finer beer bars. And speaking of finer beer bars, we have a new one that's going to be coming into the area soon. And this is from the owners of Bar X.
Oh, yeah.
They've purchased the two businesses immediately to the east of them on 200 East.
Oh, okay.
And they're renovating that, and they're going to put that. That's going to be their beer bar area. And they've come up with an awesome name. It's called Beer Bar.
I was going to say Beer X. All right, Beer Bar.
I don't know.
Works.
I don't think you can trademark it, but that's,
I like
if
it.
You drive by, you'll see the signs that say Beer Bar. I was talking to the owners at the Great American Beer Festival last weekend.
Nice.
And they're really pumped, and they've got some great plans for it. And I'll be stopping by soon and get some more info, and that should be appearing.
So will it be it'll be like a whole separate entity from Bar X, or it'll be one big?
You'll be able to access
joint?
It. You'll be able to access it through Bar X, but okay. This will have a separate feel.
Okay, right. Different room, same liquor license in the same door, kind of thing. I guess I'm picturing logistics, as you always do when you talk about booze in this state, unfortunately. But I'm like, all right, another bar on that street?
You would really have to, because you'd be waiting 4 years for another damn liquor license.
Yeah, right, exactly. So. Knock down the walls, and then, nice. Well, that's exciting.
So and that is exciting.
And that means we're going to have it's already a great bar. You add in a big, awesome beer component into that place.
Absolutely.
And, woo, look
and
out.
More guys buying beer makes... it's easier for all of us to get beer because they're bringing it in.
That's right.
And the state piggybacks
awesome.
On that. So
awesome. So between them and Epic's thing over in Sugar House, we're getting new little beer-centric joints right and left. Love it.
Salt Lake loves this beer.
It's so good.
So that, don't know exactly when that's going to open, and I don't even think they do, but it's coming, and we'll keep you posted.
Something to keep an eye on. Well, of course, you can find that info on utahbeer.blogspot.com, where Mike writes regularly, or in his beer reviews column every month here in Slug Magazine. Mike, thanks for coming in. That's some great info.
Thanks, Dan.
You bet. As always, thanks for listening to the Soundways from the Underground podcast, and be sure to fire us up every week when a new episode gets posted. And for all things Slug Magazine, visit slugmag.com. We're going to have Bill Allred, host of the Let's Go Eat Show podcast, in the studio pretty soon. We'd like to hear what you'd like to hear on his podcast, as well as what you'd like us to talk to Bill about. You can either send us an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. That line is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We just might play you on the show. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Esther Moronio, Alexander Ortega, and myself, Dan Nalen. The executive producer is Angela H. Brown. The theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. Main logo and art design is by T. Doan and the technical design by Kate Colgan. Be sure to join us next week when we'll be talking to Bill Allred, the host of the Let's Go Eat Show. We'll talk to Brock Butterfield, snowboarder extraordinaire, and we'll talk to the founder of the Urban Arts Dance and Fitness Studio.